Welcome to another episode of Army Real Talk, a segment of AUSA's Army Matters podcast. I am Nzinga Curry, Director of AUSA's Education and Programs Directorate, and today's podcast will feature a discussion on race. Americans have elevated this discussion following the killing of Mr. George Floyd. Many concerns are due to dehumanization and the lack of due process. Further discussions in the aftermath have revealed other concerns beyond Mr. Floyd's death. It has revealed that there are still racial injustices seen in the workplace, organization, as well as within the Army. Thereby, AUSA, along with the U.S. Army, are having needed yet uncomfortable conversations in order to gain a better understanding and allow for voices to be heard. In addition, there is a hope that we can learn and grow from one another. Today, I am honored to facilitate this discussion on race with Lieutenant Colonel Retired Frank Turner, Lieutenant Colonel Retired Ivory Taylor, Major Retired Tanya Ford, and First Sergeant Retired Darian Gale. Welcome. And I would love for each of you to provide a brief introduction, sharing a bit about yourself and your Army career. Lieutenant Colonel Turner, we'll start with you.
Hi, good morning. I'm Frank Turner, a 1994 West Point graduate, Army aviator, and later strategist who retired as a lieutenant colonel in 2016 after 22 years. I was also the first functional Area 59 fellow at the Association of the United States Army, 2013-2014. I'm a native Floridian and I currently live in Arlington, Virginia. I have been in the military my entire life, either as a dependent or service member. I was an Air Force brat growing up. For the last 4 years, I've been an Army spouse and stay-at-home dad. We have a college junior, a high school junior, and a third grader. I'm currently running rear operations for my family while my wife is deployed over the next year. I am Caucasian. I have benefited from white privilege, and I've never been the victim of racism or discrimination. But I have witnessed the pain and frustration of gender discrimination in the Army with my spouse early in her career. I agreed to participate in this forum not to focus on me or anything I have done. Instead, I am here to let you know it's okay if you don't understand all the issues. I can assure you that I'm still working on this. It's about understanding where we are as a country, how we can be better educated, and be ready to focus on what to do going forward. These are uncomfortable topics, but we need to have these discussions. I'm looking forward to learning from the experiences and perspectives of my fellow panel members today. I met them earlier this week, and they are truly remarkable. I am encouraged with how deeply and rapidly the Army is digging into these issues. I think there's a lot of work that still needs to be done.
Good morning. My name is Lieutenant Colonel Ivory Taylor, retired. Hail from Waco, Texas, and I served about 27 years in the Army. I currently work for the Department of Veteran Affairs and hold a couple of master's degrees, and I attended the U.S. Army War College as a civilian, which I'm very proud of, to take part in this very needed discussion on race, which I think is really long overdue.
Good morning, Mrs. Curry. And thank you for the invitation to join you in this conversation with AUSA today. Like you said, I'm currently retired, and this is a blessed experience after 20 years, 4 months, and 20 days of service, but I did not count. I enjoyed every day of it, and I would do it over again. I'm an Army brat, so I have a life of service, and I find joy in serving the community and my country. I'm the oldest girl of five, born in Colorado Springs, Colorado. My biological father wasn't military, but both of my stepfathers were both military. So I was blessed to see the world at a young age with two of my brothers and two of my sisters. And it led three of us to serve, with both of my brothers serving in the Air Force and me serving in the Army. I attended the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, and commissioned straight field artillery in 2001. I branch transferred to the Signal Corps in 2004 and retired June of 2018. I have only been married to the Army yet I have one adopted son who will be 21 in November, and I currently reside in Killeen, Texas.
Thank you, and for allowing me to take part in this discussion. My name is Darian Gale, First Sergeant retired after 20 years of service. I'm originally from a small town in South Louisiana. I grew up poor in a very racially divided town, and it is still racially divided. Throughout my military career, race was not a factor due to what I believe the structure of the military, from the rank, you wear it on your collar, everyone sees it, the layers of leaders, and the reporting systems, from team leader, squad leader, platoon sergeant, chaplain, commander, and what have you, someone is there to hear your problems if they do exist. Most of my duties have been in combat units or in support of combat units, which the camaraderie and the esprit de corps from such tough tours, such as being deployed to a number of combat-related areas such as Kuwait, Bosnia, Iraq, and Afghanistan, the team building from my fellow men and women in the military still bonds to this day.
And I thank you. I thank all of you for participating in this uncomfortable yet meaningful discussion. So let's go ahead and start the discussion by sharing personal reflections as well as perspective. My first question is, what is your take following other discussions about institutional biases and or systematic practices that limit the growth of diversity or even limit the growth or progress of a soldier? Lieutenant Colonel Taylor, would you answer this question, please?
Yes, ma'am. Well, first of all, my thoughts are institutional biases, they do exist. They're very systematic. And that relates to, for example, people of color with job assignments, evaluations, promotions, and even at times I have witnessed the level of UCMJ punishment given to soldiers of color, which were harsher than their white counterparts for basically the same type of offense. So these type of things have happened throughout my military career, and I enlisted as a private in 1983. So I've been on both sides of the fence as an enlisted soldier and as an officer, being commissioned by OCS and without a break in service. But when we talk about that limit the growth and the progress of soldiers, you don't get the right assignments, of course, you're not looked upon favorably. Evaluation, whether you're getting the best evaluation that affords you to get to the right school or be competitive with your peers, which also impact promotions. And as I've also said, UCMJ punishments, which can derail the career. So while some of my white soldiers I have seen in the past get a summarized Article 15, a soldier of color for that same offense would get an Article 15, which usually resulted in a reduction in rank as well as loss of funds. So those type of things can limit the progress of soldiers of color.
Thank you. And you spoke about the fact that you had opportunity to experience both sides as enlisted as well as officers. I would like to ask First Sergeant Gale, as enlisted NCO, is your perspective different or do you have somewhat the same perspective as Lieutenant Colonel Taylor?
I would say in a structured military upon UCMJ, before any UCMJ action is actually administered, many of the leaders, cohorts, go over the punishment, go over the charges. And me being a senior NCO would be in the officers' chambers, for example, and I would stand up for the soldier regardless of race. And in my responsibilities, no soldier would get a higher sentence, a charge, without me rattling every case there is from senators and what have you. And before I would leave that office, we would come to an agreement and it would be fair. And it was my responsibility to make sure it was fair.
Very good to hear. And people's experiences as well as perspectives are different. I have heard from an earlier webinar AUSA release from Army Senior Leadership, they were speaking of there are some avenues and some areas that have the same experience as you, First Sergeant Gale. And then there are some others that have what they call offenders who will probably fall under the category that Lieutenant Colonel Taylor spoke about. So I'll go back to you, Lieutenant Colonel Taylor. What have you learned from these experiences, from some of the unfair practices or some of the systematic practices that have taken place that could indeed prevent growth?
Well, actually, I've learned that communication is the key, but we also have to remember that some of us, we served at different times. That's why I mentioned I came in 1983. So our experiences will differ. As a young PFC, yeah, I saw something in 1983, 1984, 1985, which would be different from someone who came in the 90s or mid-90s. But what I've taken from that is that as a collective group, we have to let our leadership know what is going on. But the problem has always been this is a difficult conversation, and you don't want to be labeled as a problem child. When there is something that you perceive that is not fair or unjust, it is hard to get that thing to rise to a certain level to someone who's in a position of authority to actually make something happen or to make that change. So, but what I have done is I progressed through the ranks. I have always been an advocate, whether it was on the EO side or just talking to my fellow peers who were, I would say, white or non-black, and get their experiences, because you don't have to be a soldier of color to go through something negative. But as long as we keep the communications open, then I think there's always hope.
All right. So my next question is, have you experienced anything within the Army or in your personal life that caused you to put more of a focus on diversity? And I would like to start with Lieutenant Colonel Turner. Would you share a little bit?
I'm going to share both a professional experience as well as a personal experience. From the professional perspective, a common approach to race in the Army when I was in the military was the colorblind approach, i.e., I don't see color. Everyone bleeds red and wears green. I've seen a few Facebook posts recently similar to this. In retrospect, I wonder if this was the right approach for me. I think that we've asked service members to sacrifice important parts of their identity. And I think we've also created barriers to open discussions about important race-related topics with this approach. From a personal perspective, we're the adoptive parents of an 8-year-old mixed-race son. He's African-American and white. These issues have become more personal. Our family is committed to learning, understanding, and growing. Last November, a close high school friend told me when I was home in Florida that you can't do this alone. You need help to ensure your son understands about being African American. And he told me that he was here for me. Since then, we started building a mentorship network for both my wife and I, as well as our son. I have seen how we've become hypersensitive to how he's treated. I had a discussion with a close friend not long after the murder of Mr. Floyd. Her son is best friends with my son. She shared that her son's biggest concern was that my son was going to be killed by the police. This made us cry, really, for two reasons. The first was it was a powerful expression of love and concern that an 8-year-old friend had for my son. The second reason is the image of dinner conversations that likely happen across the country where African-American families know that they're vulnerable, and this feels much closer to reality. It's an uncertain time. I don't know what's going to happen, but we don't want things to stay the way they are. This has hit home with us because of our son, and I think that we're digging into these issues a little sooner than we had planned.
Thank you, Lieutenant Colonel Turner. That was very touching, and I appreciate you sharing. Major Ford, do you have anything that has caused you to focus more on diversity in your life or within the Army?
Personal experience as a young field artillery officer started in 2001 when I was placed at my first duty station as an officer. I found it to not be diverse at my duty station in my commissioning course, and I didn't see the senior leadership as diverse as I did growing up with my stepfathers as non-commissioned officers. During this experience, it was challenging for me because you tend to want to see what you could be. During this time, I come from such a diverse background, being an Army brat, being from Colorado Springs, living in Germany, being all over the world, but I had saw non-commissioned officers. I had never experienced personal touch with an African-American officer or with minority officers. In this challenging experience, and also being a female field artillery officer, I looked for individuals like me. I was told to blend in, and much like the gentleman just said, I was told to see green. So when individuals said uncomfortable things to me or told me things didn't matter, I was told to accept it because racism isn't what happens in the Army. We're all green. How I chose to deal with it was by asking a mentor. And how my mentor kept me motivated is he told me or asked me, do you know where they're from and do you know their experience? It's probably not intentional, Tanya. It's how they were raised. Did they affect your leadership and your position and the morale? So it chose me to look at what we were doing as a team and have a sideline conversation and let them know that they affected morale instead of disrespecting me as a soldier. So I think now that we're having those conversations and allowing the total soldier to be seen, it's very important because we are not green. We bring culture and we bring diversity to the fight, and it makes the Army stronger. It makes the armed forces stronger.
I think it's really interesting that you, as well as other minority females, you are possibly seeing obstacles as a result of being a double minority. So thank you for sharing that story. Within the Army and other institutions, there is always room for growth. I am elated to see how the Department of Defense, as well as the U.S. Army, is addressing and responding to such diversity and racial concerns. In addition, AUSA continues to provide a platform for the Army to have such discussion. Last month, I saw a memo by Honorable Esper speaking about ways to contribute and continue to build a stronger military. A few changes being implemented include diversity and inclusion committee, as well as the simple act of removing photographs from selection boards. Lieutenant Colonel Taylor, how do you think such changes would make a difference within the Army?
This has been a long question that we've looked at for a long time, even during my military career, of looking at photographs on the selection boards. I have to commend Honorable Mr. Esper for making this move and recognizing this. I said earlier that there needs to be communication through the ranks, but also I will make a recommendation that diversity training becomes mandatory at our inception schools, whether it's in the OBC, the PLDC, or whatever. When you first come in the Army, we need to train the soldiers young. So when they are above rank, they are aware of diversity and the implications of not being prejudiced against folks. Those changes you mentioned, I thought about this long and hard. For example, you look at an ORB, you got the race, mine said black, you have the photograph, you also have what school you went to. Now, I really respect the long gray line of West Point. I am not a West Point graduate. I came from OCS, I came up through the ranks that I mentioned. But if I had a soldier up for promotion at a selection board and that soldier went to West Point or the Citadel or VMI, Virginia Military Institute, and there was another soldier on the other side who went to Howard University, Grambling State, Paul Quinn College, where I went. Who do you think will probably get the nod to go forward? So there is almost an institutional type bias there. There is a West Point clique. Believe it or not, there is. So my thing is, you need to remove race off of that ORB as well. Now, can you remove everything? No, because if my last name was Gonzalez, pretty much you can say that guy's Hispanic. But we have to do everything we can to to ensure the playing field is level and fair. Because I will tell you, my former brothers and sisters, it has not always been fair. I will give you one more example. In 2015, I went to the U.S. Army War College as a civilian. I didn't make it during my military career, but I was nominated and selected as a civilian. One of my best friends, who I served with a long time, was an 06, female, black female. Now, I will tell you that it is harder for a soldier to make 06 than it is to get to the resident course at the U.S. Army War College, Carlisle Barracks, Pennsylvania. We graduated in June of 2015. She left and went to her next assignment. I went off to San Antonio to become the budget guy. I gave her a call about 6-8 months later and found out that she was out of the Army. I was surprised. I was like, what happened? She told me of an incident where she met her senior leader when she reported to her new assignment. And of course, the guy didn't even know her. And his comment was, I do not see you as being a general officer. So how can a senior leader make that assumption or make that announcement to a soldier he just met? So ultimately, she retires from the Army without fulfilling her obligation to the War College. There's a commitment. When you graduate from a school, you have to serve 2 years. When I graduated as a civilian, I have to do 3. But to make that statement to her in the face-to-face interview, and she ultimately retired with over 33 years. And oh, by the way, she was the first African-American female to ever command UMA Proving Grounds. This was a stellar soldier. And just let her know, she told me, in her mind, she just knew there was nothing she could do that would be good enough. So she chose to resign from the military. So again, I thank Mr. Esper for everything he is doing and attempting to do, but realizing there are still ways to go.
Thank you for that. I commend Honorable Esper as well. And I'm hoping that the Diversity and Inclusion Committee will present another platform for dialogue for a diverse committee to have a conversation and share stories such as these so that they can continue to grow and continue to build our wonderful, strong military. So thank you, Lieutenant Colonel Taylor. All right, First Sergeant Gales, I have a question. How do you see the Army or even our nation growing from the current environment? You know, right now, a lot of people are talking about race relations and a lot of things are even being discussed and implemented in trying to make these changes. So how do you see us growing beyond today?
We as a nation have a history of enduring hardships from many wars, Great Depression. We have to clearly outline our objective as far as what is the problem with race. As we know, as military personnel, when we go to war, there's a clear objective as far as what is the overall outcome of what you want to achieve. For example, when we invaded Kuwait, the clear military mission was to move Saddam Hussein out of Kuwait. We moved him out of Kuwait, and if we would have gone past moving him out of Kuwait and continued to beat his forces back to Iraq, it would have been illegal. And the first life, American life, we would have lost at that time would have been unmoral. So we need to clearly outline what is it we need to achieve to move forward with this inequality. As I stated before, I fix any military race problem that may have existed when and if my soldiers came to me. But what I see now, some of the things such as Civil War statues. I've done a little research, and some of the statues have value, such as General Beauregard. He was a very big activist for civil rights after the war. But on the other hand, General Gordon was a known Ku Klux Klan member. And even after the war, after the South did not win, he continued to pursue suppression for Blacks.
Thank you for pointing that out, being that my family's from the South and my mother was born in Louisiana, apparently about 45 minutes from where you are from, First Sergeant. One of the things I saw recently in the news that made me proud is the rebel flag being removed from the Mississippi flag. So there are changes being made, as well as with the different monuments. I think in Virginia, Richmond, Virginia, they just removed the monument. And working towards not having such monuments and such symbols as a sense of, they have their place in museums, they have their, definitely have a place in history, but I think they're working towards making things better as we talk about, or continue to talk about race. So thank you. Major Ford, what would you share with those who follow? You know, you shared about your remarkable career, your experience and things of that nature, but what would you say to the younger generation as it has to do with race or gender or inequality, how folks can continue to move forward and be successful, such as yourself?
What I would share with the younger generation or any generation is that their voice matters. I tend to get private emails or phone calls that say, ma'am, well, I can't do anything. I'm a millennial, or I'm just a specialist, or I'm just, and they need to eliminate the just from the vocabulary. Well, I'm just an African American. No, your voice matters. You are a citizen. Your vote matters. And the just needs to be eliminated, because if you just don't say anything, it can not make a difference. You can make a difference. You can do a memorandum for record. You can make a recommendation. You can change the world. It starts by an idea and then making a recommendation. So if you don't say anything, you can't change anything. And that's what they need to know. They need to know that they can be empowered and that they can empower others to do better. But if they sit down and complain about it without coming up with courses of actions, nothing goes anywhere. So it needs to be a generation of not just taking a photo, but doing something with the photo, not just coming up with an idea, but putting their feet and power and getting power behind the idea, so that the idea can actually work something out and make a difference. I think it's very powerful that people are listening. So that's what I would share with the generation. And that's what I've been sharing for years, because when you feel empowered and that somebody believes in you, you will continue to pass that down so that the next person can make a difference.
Thank you. And then my last question is, for Lieutenant Colonel Turner, I would like to know, do you have any recommendations as to how we can be the change that we want to see?
My recommendations are focused more on the personal and individual level. I'm encouraged with the things that I'm seeing out of Army senior leadership and hopeful that they'll continue to build on some of the initial things that they've started to do. I'm a 48-year-old white male. It was not easy for me to arrive at my current position. There was a lot of tension with our daughters during the month of May. They took a stand early on and they never wavered. Their passion and idealism are inspiring. They are part of the remarkable generation that Admiral McCraven celebrated in his remarks about millennials earlier this week. The murder of Mr. Ahmaud Arbery is when I really started to get it. I'm ashamed that I did not open my mind sooner. I protested with my daughters in Lafayette Square on 1 June. I was there to assess their safety, demonstrate my outrage over the murder of Mr. George Floyd, see and understand the protest, and bring supplies for the protesters. We left about an hour before the curfew. On a dog walk the next day, I saw local college students posting flyers all over our neighborhood outlining, what can you do? They listed, donate, advocate, march, be an ally, do something. I took it to heart and have gotten involved. I have made donations. I've signed petitions. We've taken a break from the protests due to the COVID-19 risk. I choose not to be a social media activist. I don't think most people are open to changing their minds there. I joined a book club that is reading and discussing how to be an anti-racist. A fellow West Pointer and friend, Troy Schnack, shared an open invitation a few weeks ago via social media. He's assembled and now facilitates a sizable group of mostly strangers on this journey. Ultimately, my recommendation is the last line that I saw on the flyer, do something.
Thank you very much, Lieutenant Colonel Turner. And I am hoping this podcast, as well as the webinars and Facebook events that AUSA is pushing out, and what we are doing in our personal lives, are bringing about hope and having people open up their mind to understand others' perspectives. And this podcast really had two things: to communicate, as well as create a plan for change. And again, I really am hopeful that our listeners will carry out those common things in order to add a little bit and contribute to this world that we live in. So I'm going to start by just commending each of you for taking the time and stepping up to have this discussion. Such a topic tends to be avoided. It is definitely not an easy discussion, but it is an important one. So I thank you for your service, and I thank you for contributing to making this world a little better.
To all our listeners, thanks for joining us. Be sure to subscribe to the Army Matters podcast on iTunes and everywhere podcasts are found. Join us next Monday with a brand new episode of Army Matters with Army Real Talk. The Army Matters podcast series is brought to you by the Association of the United States Army, the U.S. Army's professional association, member-supported, Army-connected. Visit us at AUSA.org for more information or to become a member. Your membership helps AUSA continue to carry out its mission to educate, inform, and connect with the total Army, our industry partners, and our supporters of a strong national defense. For questions or to provide topic recommendations, email us at podcast@AUSA.org. Have a great Army Day. Hooah.